General Holliday was the first, the general that was here during the war and very active in the defense. Mm-hmm. And he was a very nice person, a wonderful man.
And where was his headquarters?
Well, his headquarters was over in Margaret Bay, or Fort Mears was called. And then when they moved over on this side, why, he had left. I don't know where he went, but military secrets. Mm-hmm. And I went to, I took some prisoners to one to Salt Lake City, one to Philadelphia. And then I went into Washington, D.C., and on business, and bought a car, and then found out that I couldn't get gasoline to drive back to Seattle. So I took my problem to Mr. Matchett, who was in charge of all deputy marshals, and he referred the case to a T.D. Quinn. He was administrative assistant to the attorney general at the time. And he told me that he'd given me a letter directing me to return to my station by automobile, that I could use the letter to get gasoline and whatever I needed to transport me across the continent. But I wasn't to turn in mileage, as we understood. And he repeated it, that I wasn't to turn in mileage. So that was the way I got in. I went down this ration board with this letter, and this guy that was kind of distant and aloof, I thought he'd tear the place to pieces, get me a big long sheet of these tickets for gasoline stuff. So I call that my magic letter. I still have it.
You got a car from this place here? Who cut all the roads around here? When did they cut them? Were there any roads before?
There were no roads.
No cars either?
No. The Alaska Commercial Company had a car, and they run it up the street. The town was surveyed when I came here, and there were supposed to be streets, and they were grass and mud, and they'd run their truck when it was dry and leave it down in the place where it was wet. But the military built all the roads, and I think the figure on that, and they had heard an average, was $256,000 a mile.
Wow.
Yes.
How many miles are there?
How many miles are there of roads? Oh, ask the city engineer. He made a survey.
They claim 56 miles of roads, but that's for the state, so I really don't know how accurate that is.
It could be. Yes, it could be very.
I think there's something. There's around 40 miles that I've traveled myself around, so I know it's around there.
They had lots of roads. In fact, in another couple of years, this would look like New York. It would be a big place.
That took a false economy for the military here.
Yeah.
Could you give us some idea of the history of the fishing industry here after the herring business failed?
Well, yes. In fact, I was engaged in fishing most of the time as a part of my livelihood. In fact, I'd explain that Marshall's job was a political job and would terminate at the end of if there was a change in politics. And so I was thinking of supporting my family if there was this change come about. So I got in the fishing industry that I had been before, and after that, in answer to your question, and after the herring disappeared, we still had the codfish, and that was a fairly good business. And there was a James Manson that had what they called the Manson Fish Packing Corporation, and he put up as well as herring, and his income over, say, a long period of time was somewhere around $1,800, he explained, which at that time was a fairly good income for the amount of work they did. So then, of course, the codfish disappeared. No one seems to know where they went to. And he didn't catch codfish out here now. I guess he'd go out and fish them. Mm-hmm. Nobody does.
Has anyone tried halibut before this year here?
Oh, yes. In fact, you could go out and catch halibut most any place you wanted to throw a line over. But unfortunately, somebody gave the Japanese and the Russians permission to trawl, fish, anything they want in within 3 miles of our shore. Now, I was instrumental.
Three miles
of our shore. Now, I put my crab pots out 8 and 12 miles. But I don't dare put them out there and have them lost, because at one time I lost 9 crab pots, and I reported it, as well as another boat that lost 15. And they figured that a trawler came in this string and then back on my string and scooped up our pots and left. No one knows what happened to them, but to have so many pots in a string disappear indicated that there was some help along the line. It wasn't sea lion that eventually knocked a pot down. But
we very definitely needed a national law on fishing.
Well, Bartlett and Greening, now that's both senators, were instrumental in getting this 12-mile limit, and for some reason the State Department has got such power that they can tell the President of the United States what to do. Now I'll call to mind what they did on when Russia applied for permission to abolish the embargo that the United States had on Japanese imports of crab into the United States. And all of the industry opposed it, as well as our state government and our senators in Congress. And at that time it was Senator or President Kennedy, and he was much in favor of denying the abolition of this embargo that was set up, that Russian labor was slave labor. But then the State Department came out with the explanation that Russian labor at that time was not slave labor. It had no longer been that way for quite a number of years. And so therefore, they should abolish this embargo, which they did. And someplace along the line, on a high political level, they control and trawl and fish gill nets within 3 miles of our shore. And the Navy is supporting that 3-mile limit. And we should have 200-mile, or we should have continental shelf.
Do you think there's any possibility of the continental shelf or 200-mile limit?
Not until they change the janitor that's running the fishing industry in Washington, D.C.
Well, that's right. It'll have to be done on a high political level, and the number of fishermen have declined. That is, there's not too many. Our voice can't be heard too well. But unless they create some kind of an international incident, like they did in 1936 on this salmon thing, where the Japanese were fishing 7-mile nets up in Bristol Bay.
They still are, aren't they?
Well, the Koreans were. And sure, they're going to kill our industry, our
oh,
family.
Yeah, sure. Bristol Bay's already gone.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You're
yeah.
very right.
Yeah. So is Ahab.
As well as all the rest of the fishing industry, unless we start regulating the controlling it.
Bow guns on all the crab boats.
Yeah, right. So, one thing that could be done, and I think there's a state organization, or it isn't state, it's in the state, and it's sponsored, I think, by the University of Alaska. I'm not exactly sure, but they publish a paper, and I have a couple of those papers in my possession.
The Geophysical Institute from the University of Alaska?
Not a geophysical, no. This is
marine.
That's, well, that's the marine thing, yes.
Oh.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that an organization of that kind could really do something. But the most effective thing that was done that I noticed was when this guy that published the Fisherman's News down at
In Seattle,
yes. Now, I don't remember the name of the organization he represented. He started it. Congress of American Fishermen, I think it was. And they created a boycott on Russian imported vessels in New York. There was a boycott. They wouldn't unload a Japanese vessel in Seattle. Now, this guy disappeared. I don't know what happened to him, but I think he was kicked upstairs. He was given probably a good government job and they quiet him up. But that was the end of this Congress of American Fishermen. But that was a very effective organization during the time that this guy was head of it.
Yeah, something's got to be done, because, like, off by Amley Island, the Japanese, we heard that they took 23 million pounds out of there. They open up ADAC season and there was no crab, so they close it down. And the American fleet moves out and Japs move right in again, you know. They got
that's
no
right.
quarter or nothing.
That's right.
And we starved because of it.
I took some people over to Akutan, and of course I know people over there, and I went ashore and visited during the night. And I left there, about 4 o'clock. It was just a breaking day when I left Akutan Harbor. And when I went in Akutan Harbor, there was a great big fleet of catcher boats with a couple of Japanese processing vessels anchored in Akutan Bay. And when I got close to these four that I could see, they all had their trawls out, trawling out of Akutan Bay. And I imagine the rest of them did too. But I did see the four of them that I could see. I was close enough to see that they had their wire overboard and was trawling. And they disregard any kind of law. Now we have to observe, as fishermen, we have to observe some real drastic fishing laws.
Really?
We have to take fish, we'll talk about crab, a certain size.
Yeah.
The Japanese can take everything, and they take everything.
Sure they do.
Females, small crab, everything. Then we'll talk about salmon industry. They have 14 miles nets. I cruise one time, and I make 9 knots with the ester, and I cruised this net, and it was 14 miles long. And they had, I could see the net. Sometimes it was up this way, and sometimes it was straight up and down, and sometimes it laid over the other side. And one time I nearly run into it. But anyway, they had different size mesh. You could hardly see it. It was monofilament. And I know how destructive that method of fishing is, because I've done it. But I did it legally. Now, they fished all the time, 24 hours a day, all during the time that they can catch fish, regardless of when it is, whenever they can catch fish, they're out there fishing. And they've developed some very good methods of fishing. They can really catch fish. You've got to hand it to the Japs. They're good fishermen. But let's look at the industry. Let's look at the Bristol Bay season last year. They had, I think, 2 days of it for the American fishermen.
Yeah, they didn't have.
They've cleaned them out.
Yeah. Well, that's because they go out and they keep lowering their mesh size and they catch them a year before they're supposed to go in.
That's right. They catch them all the time. Now, I'll tell you about my experience as a fisherman on the high sea. I fished illegal two skates of gear, and it was 5.5-inch mesh. And I was out off of Bishop Point. I was probably 15 miles offshore, and I would watch for seagulls diving, and then I'd get closer and I'd see sea lions, and they were feeding the seagulls because they were full of fish, and the seagulls would dive down and get a few bites of this salmon and eat what crumbs were left. And I'd go up ahead of this school of fish. I could see the fish jumping then, and go up ahead of the school of fish and lay out my gear. And sometimes there'd be so many hit it that they would sink it. And I'd try to avoid that because it was quite a job to get it back. So anyway, one time I had a pressure hit me. A real bad southeaster came, and I had to leave. I had about half my gear picked, really heavy. And when I got back to the net, there were very few fish left in it. Now, it's my contention that the storm, the action of the storm, shakes the net and the dead fish go to the bottom. And that's what happens to the Japanese method of fishing. And that's why I say it's one of the most destructive methods of fishing known. It's at least the worst I know. So then that was, I don't remember what year it was, but the Martisich brothers, they were Everett people that come up. They had the Dreamland and the Frigidland and another one that I don't remember, but they caught me on it. And they come up and watch me and picking my net, and so they went out ahead of me and they wrapped around a few fish and got quite a load of fish, and they wound up around Port Moore. And then the Fish and Wildlife, it was a federal organization at that time, stopped. They had to stop fishing on the high sea. And then prior to that, there was a...
Was that with those big ones, like Sealand of the Pacific?
No, they were seine boats.
Oh, I see.
But there was a research vessel, and I think it was a torpedoed, that fished off of Cape Flattery, and they used a 6-mile net, and they got quite a catch. So one of these guys that was a crew member of the torpedoed decided that was pretty good fishing and he could make a go of it, and he had a little gill net boat, and he went out and got a load. Well, pretty soon there, you know, he came in, and fishermen are always like a bunch of seagulls. And they all converge on one another. And so there were quite a number of them went out and caught the salmon on the high sea off Cape Flattery. And that was the end of our high seas fishery for an American.
Yeah.
You can't fish out. outside of the 3 mile limit for salmon. But the Jap can. The Jap can do anything. The Russian can do the same. The Korean. So we've got to have some kind of regulation for our fishery. And unless we have it, well, then we can go down in history as being the end of our fishery. Well, maybe that's true. Since it's Watergate, it makes me wonder.
I think perhaps we should close on that note. And we thank you very much.
Well, if I've helped this room, I'm awful glad of the opportunity. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to join you. I really would like to be an active member in it.
Wonderful. You can sign the incorporation papers. Thank you very much.
Very good. You're welcome.
These pictures that you have, Bernie, is there any way that I can come over and see them?
Yeah, the kids will bring them out to you. I don't even know where they put them. They better find them. Yeah, Dennis will tell you what they are, too.